For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farm and Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, the springtime cold waters of the Delaware River are flowing free of ice, and boating enthusiasts look forward to another season of fun. Members of the Upper Delaware River chapter of the National Canoe Safety Patrol share their experience and inspiration as active volunteers in partnership with the National Park Service. Commodore Rob Post, Treasurer Tom Candela, and Ingrid Peterick from the National Park Service came into our Radio Catskill studios in advance of their new season. All of that and Keith Hubbard's Star Talk. After news headlines from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. The Supreme Court is ordering the Trump administration to temporarily halt plans to use the Wartime Alien Enemies Act to deport alleged Venezuelan gang members from a detention facility in North Texas. The brief order overnight followed an emergency appeal filed by the American Civil Liberties Union. Here's NPR's Jimena Bastillo.
Justices wrote that the government is directed to not remove any member of the, quote, punitive class of detainees from the United States until further order from the court. These would be some of the Venezuelan migrants being held at the Blue Bonnet facility in Texas. Justices Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito dissented.
Maryland Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen says the Kilmer-Obergo-Garcia case is not just about one man, it's about protecting constitutional rights. Van Hollen spoke to reporters following his return to the U.S. from El Salvador, where he met with Obergo-Garcia after a meeting was initially rejected. Abrego Garcia is the man the Trump administration has acknowledged it mistakenly deported. Van Hollen says he has been moved from the Salvadoran prison for gang members to a detention center with better conditions. The Trump administration reclassifying 50,000 federal workers to make it easier to fire them. The move follows mass firings under Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency. NPR's Danielle Kurtzleben has more.
The Office of Personnel Management proposed a rule that would move the reclassification process forward. Trump will still have to sign another executive order to implement it. The policy is also known as Schedule F, and it would remove federal civil service protections from around 2% of the federal workforce, according to the White House. Those workers would instead be at-will employees who serve at the pleasure of the sitting president. The president wrote about the policy on social media on Friday, saying, quote, "If these government workers refuse to advance the policy interests of the president or are engaging in corrupt behavior, they should no longer have a job." Danielle Kurtzleben, NPR News.
On Wall Street, stocks slumped this week as the chairman of the Federal Reserve offered a cautious forecast about the economic outlook. NPR Scott Horsley reports all of the major stock indexes ended the week in the red.
President Trump's new tariffs continue to cast a shadow over the stock market. Ordinarily, investors would have been cheered by a report showing stronger than expected retail sales, but much of the gain was dismissed as shoppers stocking up before the steep new import taxes took effect. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell warned the tariffs are likely to cause at least a temporary jump in inflation. Trump wasn't happy with Powell's remarks. In a social media post, he said Powell's termination cannot come fast enough. Economists and other central bankers were quick to defend Powell, but the dust-up was another source of worry for investors. Both the Dow and the Nasdaq lost 2.6% for the week, while the S&P 500 index fell 1.5%. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
And from Washington, you're listening to NPR News.
In Europe, they're hares. In North America, they're jackrabbits. Next time on The Waggleload of Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, here on Radio Catskill, I bring you British and Irish folk songs about hares, including hares that talk to the hunters. Please join me on Sunday afternoon at 3.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm your host, Rosie Starr. On today's show, members of the Upper Delaware River Chapter of the National Canoe Safety Patrol share their experience and inspiration as active volunteers in an organization partnership with the National Park Service. Commodore Rob Post, Treasurer Tom Candela, and Ingrid Peterick from the National Park Service came to our Radio Catskill studios in Liberty in advance of their new season. But first, here is Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report. Thank you for joining us on Radio Catskill for this week's locally produced Farm and Country.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. This week will be the best time this year to see Mercury in the morning. Mercury will be at its highest point in the morning sky on Monday. It will also be at its farthest point from the sun in the morning sky on Monday too. This event is known as Mercury's Greatest Western Elongation. Mercury's Greatest Western Elongations come in pairs about 6 weeks apart, and the pairs occur about every 4 months. Mercury is the closest planet to the sun and is also the smallest planet in the solar system. Due to its proximity to the sun, it is only visible around sunrise or sunset. This week, Mercury will be visible low on the unobstructed eastern horizon for almost 1 hour before the sun rises, but there will only be a short 15-minute window to view Mercury. Mercury will rise at 5:15 a.m., but won't be able to be seen until 5:30 a.m. At that time, Mercury will be only 2 degrees above the horizon. By 5:45 a.m., the planet will be 5 degrees above the horizon, and the glow of the soon-to-be rising sun may obscure Mercury. Use the very bright Venus as a guide to the much fainter Mercury. Mercury will be to the lower left of Venus on Monday morning. Don't confuse Saturn for Mercury. Saturn will be closer to and almost directly below Venus. Look to the eastern horizon 30 minutes before sunrise on Monday for your chance to spot Mercury. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard reminding you to keep looking up.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr in our Liberty Studios. Today we'll be learning about the Upper Delaware River Chapter of the National Canoe Safety Patrol. It's that time of the year when the ice has broken and the cold river waters are flowing freely. Folks are eager to plan activities in the water, whether it's fishing or paddling for fun. Safety first is always a good motto to live by, so I invited community members to talk about canoe safety as we approach warmer weather and outdoor aquatic activities. Joining me in conversation is Tom Candela, volunteer and treasurer with the Upper Delaware River Chapter of the National Canoe Safety Patrol. It's a double treat to work with Tom in the studio as he's a Radio Catskill volunteer. Tom, say hello to our audience. Introduce yourself with a little bit about your background that led you to be treasurer of the Upper Delaware River Chapter of the National Canoe Safety Patrol.
Well, thank you, Rosie. Yes, I joined the organization about 5 years. I think this will be my fifth or sixth season with them. Initially, just as a regular volunteer, I found out about the organization through an ad that they had placed in the River Reporter some years ago. And at the time, I had very, very little paddling skills, whether it be in a kayak or a canoe. Most of my experience had been going down the Delaware on a raft, you know, renting from one of the vendors there, from one of the liveries. I saw this ad and I was real interested because I love the outdoors. I live in very close to the river up in Beach Lake in Damascus, Pennsylvania area. And I thought this would be a great way to really enjoy the river and couple that with some safety and rescue experience. I'm a nurse. I had been a nurse for over 30 years and working in emergency rooms. So I had that skill and I wanted to be able to apply that skill in a volunteer capacity. And I thought this would be a great way to do it. And so I joined and started training. Their first training that I experienced was a very cold end of April, beginning of May weekend. That's when we do our training. And sort of the rest after that was history. I became very active in doing my going above the required 4 days of volunteer work on the river with the organization. I went beyond that, as many of the members do. They always do more than just the 4. And through that, I became very good friends with a lot of the members. And we recently had some whole new officers within the organization is sort of a turnover. And I was nominated to be the treasurer, and I accepted the nomination. And then I got elected by my peers. And then here we are now. Today, we're with our Commodore, Rob Post, who's also newly elected to that position. And one of our partners is the National Park Service. And with us today also is Ingrid Peterick. We're here today to talk about our organization and how we serve our community.
Okay. Well, welcome all of you to the studios and to Radio Catskill and to our Farm and Country show that very much loves the Upper Delaware River. Where would you like to start? Let's welcome the National Park Service here. Ingrid, tell us a bit about your background that brought you to our Upper Delaware area.
Oh, sure. So I joined the National Park Service way back when, in the 1980s. That's dating myself for sure. And I started my career out in western Pennsylvania and had the opportunity to go to Steamtown National Historic Site and then ended up here at Upper Delaware, Scenic and Recreational River. And I have been here over 30 years. I've had almost every superintendent that's been working for the National Park Service. And it really is a very special place, the Upper Delaware. And we take care of 73 miles of the Upper Delaware River, where the East and West branches come together up in Hancock, New York, and then it travels between Pennsylvania and New York all the way down to just above Port Jervis, New York. And so we are one of 430-plus units of the National Park Service.
For a job description, it's quite beautiful. It's wild and scenic. We love it, and thank you for your work. And Commodore Rob Post is here. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and what led you to being part of this Safety River Patrol.
Rosie, thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to talk about the National Canoe Safety Patrol, which is an organization that I adore, frankly. And I'm humbled and proud to be sitting next to Tom and Ingrid while we discuss this, because just hearing them summarize their background just reminded me how special they are and how special all our volunteers are who carve out large chunks of time and energy to be of service to people using the river. That, to me, is really the mission of the National Canoe Safety Patrol. It's a service organization, but we also have fun paddling. I joined about 13 years ago. I was leading a boys club with all the dads for a few years. It was our sons. We were outdoors all the time, doing everything outside. Every meeting had to be outside all year long. And it was really great. Our boys loved it. It was very gratifying to us as fathers. And we decided we're going to canoe the Upper Delaware. And we decided to canoe from Skinner's Falls to a campground below 10 Mile River. And what took place while we planned the trip, it was exciting to plan it. It was months out. I had this feeling, I'm just not qualified to do this. I had been around the water all my life, and I had some close calls. And I realized, if I'm inviting people out on the water, I need to have some kind of training or at least be able to do something to ensure that they're going to have a good trip without any unfortunate events. So a neighbor of mine had a canoe trailer in the front of his house, like once or twice a year, with a whole bunch of canoes on it. I didn't really know him, but I decided, what the heck? I'm going to go talk to this guy and figure out if he can help me. And I went. His name is Ken Bailey. He was a member of the NCSP, the National Canoe Safety Patrol, for a long time. He was an open book. He said, I know what you're up against. I run trips like this and I have for years. Come to the training, join, you'll get trained, you'll feel better about this, and we'll see if we can't get a few members to come with you on your trip down the river. And that's what started it all for me. And I've been with him ever since, and I've just honed my skills on the water and my rescuing skills, leadership skills, and made a lot of friends along the way.
All three of you have beautiful skills to bring to this position. And it's really admirable. You speak with such pride, and I love seeing that in your work. It's very important work. Let's go around and talk about some of the challenges that you're facing. Are you on duty 12 months of the year or just during the summer?
We work in season. So our training weekend, which is the big event of our year for members, is the first weekend of May. That's when people join, they come to the training, and we get them kind of tooled up with skills and equipment and knowledge and contacts to go out and be effective on the water. And that starts the very beginning of May. Our season continues then through September. So we're patrolling mostly weekends and holidays throughout the summer and the fall.
There's often times that the river doesn't freeze. Do you ever get called out to be helpful when folks are out on the water in the winter? I mean, if there's no ice, you can't ice fish, but are people foolish enough to get in that water in the winter?
Absolutely, they are. I would say during the winter times, you're not going to see people kayaking or canoeing, obviously not tubing, but you get a lot of dedicated fishermen that are out on the water in the winter time. And I think one of the things that people need to be aware of, especially during cold water wear, which is November 1st to the end of April, is that it is mandatory life jacket wear. So right now, you must wear a life jacket when you're on the water. That will end May 1st, but we still encourage everybody to be wearing a life jacket, whether they're fishing, boating, swimming, or floating. It's the number one safety equipment piece that you need while you're out on the water. And we've never had anybody drown specifically wearing a properly fitted life jacket. So if nobody takes anything else away, that's the number one thing.
Thank you for clarifying that. I wanted to highlight that particular issue. I know a lot of your communications are safety first, life jackets save lives. That's what I see in your communication. And they do.
Yes, absolutely, Rosie. And that's one of our roles, too, as members of the National Canoe Safety Patrol, is to educate the public and make them aware of some of the risks that they're taking on the river. Because a lot of people who come to our river, they think, well, I could swim in a pool. So they jump in the water and they think that the river is like a pool, and it really isn't, with the currents in the pool and the depth of the pool and some of the natural dangers of any river, you know, rocks and things like that. So part of our role as volunteers is to educate the public into some of the dangers that might be on the river, but also always highlighting the fact that life jackets do save lives. And in fact, I might be mistaken, but I don't think we've had any loss of life of anyone who is wearing a life jacket.
A properly fitted life jacket.
Properly, exactly. And that's the other part. You know, people put it on, but they don't buckle it, or they have a life jacket that's way too big for them, so that when they jump in the water, it rises above their head. It's an ineffective life jacket, so it's not going to help them at all. So that's some of the things that we do. Hey, you need to buckle that up. But we even help people to size them out. Hey, the one you're wearing is a little too big for you. Why don't you go up to the livery where they do offer life jackets for people to use and get refitted for that. Some people will do it and some people won't. We're not there to be authority on the river or to beat people up in any way verbally. We're basically there to offer our experience and offer our knowledge of the river and hopefully pass on some safety tips to folks. Then in addition to that, we do actually rescue people. The word rescue in our title is there for a reason. Because one of the things that we see at areas like Skinner's Falls, for example, are a lot of boat overs. You know, people going down the river in a canoe or a kayak, and they go over, they turn over, and in goes their stuff, in goes their person, sometimes in goes their dog and their children. And we're there usually, it's one of our big spots to patrol, is at the bottom of Skinner's Falls to pull people out as they get into trouble. And I've only been doing this, like I said, it'll be my sixth season. Rob has been doing it so much longer than I am. So he's had so many more rescues than I have. And he could tell you a little bit more stories, if you would, Rob, anything in particular that you want to highlight.
Well, what I would like to ask, in addition to life jackets, are there other safety issues that you can bring to mind? When people go out for the day, I'm always thinking about water. You know, it's hot. You got to stay hydrated. Do you need permits for your boat usage in the water? Are permits required? And let's talk about a list of five things that really you should be very aware of to bring with you for safety.
I'll just jump in as far as the permits go. No, you don't need to have a permit for as long as it's a non-motorized boat. So canoes, kayaks, rafts do not need to have a permit or be registered either in Pennsylvania or New York. If it's a motorized boat, then it does, depending on which state that you live in. It got kind of confusing because New York had one law rule and Pennsylvania had another. Now it's strictly no, doesn't matter where you launch or take out of.
The number one thing, really above everything else, is what we've already said, but it bears repeating, a properly fitted life vest. Number one, the entire time you're on the water. There really is no time where it's appropriate to take it off. We've come to a point in our culture where everyone takes for granted. They wear their seatbelts. Our cars tell us annoyingly when we don't. I would really like to see all of us, the river users, everyone around any water, to feel the same way about life jackets. Just put them on. They will save you. If you have a medical event, if you fall in, anything happens. If you think you can swim a section but you get swept away, you're going to be buoyant and we're going to be able to rescue you. And it's not going to be a tragic, traumatic event. It might be disruptive. We'll get you back on your way. You might even get a little bruise or bump from the rocks, but we can take care of that as rescuers. I would say aside from that, and that is the biggest one, you nailed it. You stay hydrated. People are out here in the summer a lot. They need to stay hydrated. They need to use sunscreen. They need to have food. Just the regular common sense things. It's an environment that people aren't in every day. They're going there to have a good time, and it's different, and they're not always prepared. But the common sense things are just that, to, you know, stay hydrated, eat, use sunscreen, use common sense, and take seriously the reality of safety on the water. Look out for your friends, things like that. I think that alone would go a long way.
And looking out for your friends, I'd just like to add to what happens fairly frequently when we do have a major incident. They're going along down the river in a raft full of people. And sometimes they have a raft tied to their smaller raft or to their booze raft. And somebody will jump in the water to take a swim and usually jumps in the water without the jacket. And the other folks, they're having their drinks, they're having their fun, and they sort of forget that somebody else is in the water. And then they turn around and suddenly say, hey, where's so-and-so? So what has happened in the past is people who jump in the water without that life jacket at times might dive in and hit their head on a rock, but they're unaware of what happened. Their friends are unaware what happened on the raft because they're not watching. So I think one of the safety issues can be aware of who's in the raft with you, who's going in the water, and how long they're in the water, and always keep an eye on that person. Even if you think they're a good swimmer, you should always be conscious of the fact, you know, where your party is. So we see things like that. Other issues with safety that I have seen is people tying down, and I'm going to bring up dogs because I love dogs, but people tying their dog to the raft or to the canoe. They bring a leash. They're afraid the dog is going to take off. So they'll leash the dog to the raft. And what happens if that raft or that canoe or that kayak goes over and turns over and everybody's spread out all over the place? That dog's underwater and he's tied to the boat. We've rescued dogs out of the river as well as people for incidents like that. You know, people don't really think about. Another part of our safety training, when we go there, when we see people doing that, we'll say to them, hey, it's really best if you don't tie your dog onto that raft or, you know, lash him to anything like that. So
let's take a moment now to try and inspire folks, because you're saying that you have an event that comes up in May. Yeah. And is there a deadline to register for that? Let's inspire folks with information when that event is, and if there's a deadline to sign up.
Our training is the first weekend of May, so it's the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. People arrive on the Friday, the 2nd, and then the training starts in earnest Saturday morning and continues to midday on Sunday. We are always looking for more volunteers. Our website is the nationalcanoesafetypatrol.org. So it's very easy to find. You can sign up there. There's a contact form if you have questions. There's a lot of information there for anyone interested in becoming a member and serving the community in this particular unique way. Plenty of training to be had. People get mentors. They're going to leave feeling probably like they got hit with a fire hose of information, but it all kind of settles down after the first few patrols with your mentor. You learn, I can do this. This is great. It's gratifying. I'm out in nature. It's just a wonderful way to merge a love for the outdoors with service.
Ingrid, would you like to chime in on this?
I certainly would. I think we're kind of remiss in not acknowledging that the National Canoe Safety Patrol has been around since 1979. So 45 years celebrating last year. And the National Park Service, we could not do what we do without having this 60-plus member group volunteering on the river. And yes, they're doing their spring training. You got invaluable training. But more importantly, what they're offering visitors to the river is they come out on the weekends. You're going to see them in their red shirts and their red hats and their canoes, kayaks. And last year, they did over 90 river rescues. So they're modest. They're not telling you that. They made over 9,000 contacts with visitors on the river. So the National Park Service values everything that the National Canoe Safety Patrol does. And I would love if more local people would come out and volunteer with them. You can be a novice, you can be an Olympiad, right? It doesn't matter. They're a great group of people to work with. I love working with them. Absolutely.
And it's a lot of fun. You're out on the river. You know, I'm always surprised living so close to the river. I tend not to go out on it as much as I should almost. But when I'm on the river, I look around and I see the bald eagles. I see the trees. And I think, I live here. What a privilege it is to live in this area and to be able to enjoy this great resource that we have. And the water is gorgeous. I mean, this past year, it seemed really clear, right? Yeah. I mean, the water was crystal clear this year. I don't know if it's because there was less storms or whatever, but it was beautiful. And to be able to experience that with a bunch of people who have similar love for the outdoors and for the river and for kayaking and for helping people, it's an honor to do it. And thank you, Ingrid, for mentioning that, because we do make a lot of contact with people and we do a lot in this service. And I'm really hoping that we get more people involved. There's no real deadline as far as when you could sign up, and we will assign you a mentor. We do want you to come to training because that's where you're going to get the basic skills. And for those folks that are out there who think, oh, you know, I barely know how to paddle, I barely knew how to paddle when I started, and we have such a great group of experienced people that are always willing to share their knowledge and their skills, always willing to reach out and help you become a better paddler, become a better rescuer. I wouldn't worry about anything like that. As far as equipment and things like that, we do have loaner equipment. We do have loaner boats, loaner kayaks, loaner wetsuits, loaner dry suits. In fact, I'm going to say something nice about NPS. They donated great dry suits to us this past season, which was very helpful. And so the people who come to our training, if they don't have the proper clothing, we can certainly loan that to them. So don't worry about what equipment you have. Just come out and join us. We'd love to have you. I want to give that website again for those of you who are interested. It's the NationalCanoeSafetyPatrol.org. That is our website. It's very user-friendly, and you could find out how to become a member and come out and join us in this coming spring training, which is the, I think it's 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, is it, of May this year?
Thank you, all of you, for coming in. It's an honor to work with you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes. It's a gift to us as well.
Thank you very much for having us on.
Our conversation closed with a big nod of recognition to the late Dick Rhodes, founding member of the National Canoe Safety Patrol. For more information, visit thenationalcanoesafetypatrol.org. We hope that you enjoyed our show this week with production by Radio Catskill volunteers Keith Hubbard and myself, Rosie Starr. Special thanks goes to our guests, National Canoe Safety Patrol volunteers Commodore Rob Post, Treasurer Tom Candela, and Ingrid Peterick from the National Park Service. Thank you for listening local to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, conversations, and